You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Any fish you need, you can call me. Don't worry about it, that's my steed, no, that's all me. Just know if you cross her, then you cross me, cross me, cross me. With you, with you, with you, with you, with you. Any fish you need, you can call me. Don't worry about it, that's my steed.
Getting your commute going with Ed Sheeran this morning. It's called Cross Me. Features Chance the Rapper and PMB Rock, wherever that dude is. We've got the shit show going on Capitol Hill.
Anything she needs, she can call me. Don't worry about it, that's my steed, oh, that's all me. Just know if you cross her, then you cross me, cross me, cross me. With you, with you, with you, with you,
you cross her.
My daughter Catherine tells me this isn't a song about revenge, Dad. I said it might be. She said it's not.
Messing with no other man. Now what you not gonna do is stand there across from me like you got kung fu. That's their
kung fu.
Like a box set. But y'all know that my girl been doing CrossFit. Kung pop and yo with a cross kick. Pulling air out, wearing out, you exhausted. No, she gonna slide and tell you. Keep a little blade up. Clock kid. No one say hi to me without her. Better pay your respect.
She's the queen.
Better do that without a word.
Colleen says, what's HBIC? Come on, Colleen, get with it. You're 16. So, good Thursday morning. Cool show today. Yeah. You know it's going to be cool when we start off the program with a song about revenge. Eddie Sheeran. You know, they used to be called Redheads, right? Now they've got like a cool name. Ginger. Whatever, man. I'm alright with it. But if you cross her... You cross me. Hold on, I gotta take a phone call.
Baby, I got the feels, yeah. Say that I'm out my mind, but it's something real, something real. Ooh, I got the feels, yeah. I would most my life, but it's something
real. The, I'm not happy. Well, I shouldn't say I'm not happy. The, you know, I've been working on, getting like the Iranian version of Grant Newsham on the program, and we were gonna do it today, and she said I have to cancel today. I know, she said, I know you're gonna hate me. I said I know, but I won't hate you more than I do right now. She said okay, that's okay, I can live with that. But she said I didn't want to text you. I said well, I'm on the air. All right. She goes, oh! Good morning to you. I finished up one of my books about prisoners of war during Vietnam. And so I'm laying in bed this morning. I woke, for whatever reason, God woke me up at 3:45 this morning. And so the Iranian expert is rescheduling with me. So I was listening to it, and the story is an amazing story, right? So their devotion to each other and their whole thing with, you know, return with honor, and that that their war was, you know, wherever they were being held. And so the guys who were at the Hanoi Hilton, and I'm going to play a little bit of it. I mean, their devotion to each other is incredible. And they knew how the repatriation was supposed to go. But, you know, I mean, if you can imagine, you know, their kind of transition and the way they lived, it's, you know, it's barbaric. And then to go from there one day to an airport in Hanoi and then get on a plane, and then the plane takes you to Clark Air Base in the Philippines, and then you get off, and they have a red carpet on the tarmac. You're asked maybe to say a few words, because the whole nation's watching. You don't really, you've thought about this for a long time, but you know, how will we be received when we go home, right? What are people going to say? What are they going to think of us? And, you know, if you can imagine all that going through somebody's head. And then there's a group called Kissinger's 20. So, you know, the operation became known as Operation Homecoming, right? So let me read you just about the Kissinger 20, and then I'm going to play you a little audio because it's pretty cool. I mean, I was laying in bed this morning listening to it, you're right, with tears in my eyes, you know, just imagining the overwhelming emotion that these guys must have felt as they, you know, as they get released and just the unknown, like, what is, you know, what's waiting for us? We have no idea. So what happens is, as this Operation Homecoming commences, the order of repatriation is supposed to go, the oldest POWs that have been held go first, right? And they've talked about this, right? And so, but the very first to leave were the ones that were in dire need of medical assistance, right? And so they went first. So after they go first, right, then this story comes up about the Kissinger 20. And I'll just read it from the Wikipedia page. The culture of the POWs held in the infamous Hanoi Hilton prison was on full display with the story that would come to be known as the Kissinger 20. One of the tenets of the agreed-upon code between those held at the Hanoi Hilton stipulated that the POWs, unless seriously injured, would not accept an early release. The rule entailed that the prisoners would return home in the order that they were shot down and captured. The POWs held at the Hanoi Hilton were to deny early release because the communist government of North Vietnam could possibly use this tactic as propaganda or as a reward for military intelligence. The first round of POWs to be released were released in February of 1973. Most included injured soldiers and airmen in need of medical attention. Following the first release, 20 prisoners were then moved to a different section of the prison. But the men knew something was wrong as several POWs with longer tenures were left in their original cells. After discussions, the 20 prisoners agreed that they should not have been the next POWs released, as they estimated it should have taken another week and a half for most of their discharges, and came to the conclusion that their early release would likely be used for North Vietnamese propaganda. Consequently, in adherence to their code, the men did not accept release by refusing to follow instructions or put on their clothes. They did this for 4 days. Finally, on the fifth day of the protest, Colonel Norm Gaddis, the senior American officer left at the Hanoi Hilton, went to the men's cell and gave them a direct order that they would cooperate. The men followed orders, but with the stipulation that no photographs were to be taken. It turned out that Henry Kissinger went to Hanoi after the first round of releases. The North Vietnamese gave him a list of the next 112 men scheduled to be sent home. They asked Kissinger to select 20 more men to be released early as a sign of goodwill. Unaware of the code agreed upon by the POWs, Kissinger ignored their shutdown dates and circled 20 names at random. So I want to play for you a little excerpt out of that. Now, this is from the book entitled 6 Years in the Hanoi Hilton. And it's about Jim Shively. And he's an Air Force F-105 pilot. I want to say he spent, obviously he spent 6 years. But it's his story. But listen to this. I mean, it's amazing.
A few days after the first prisoners left, Jim and 19 other men were taken to the other side of the camp, where the sick and wounded had been taken the night before their release. The V handed them each a set of new clothes, a gray uniform, especially designed to make it look like they had dressed the prisoners well while they were in custody. Their captors told them, "You were going to be released tomorrow." The prisoners were dumbfounded. They expected to be released in order of capture, and this was definitely out of order. The selected group of 20 men refused to leave. Their senior ranking officer acted as spokesperson for the group. "It has always been our policy that we will go in the order of shootdown. You have already released the sick and wounded, but now it is supposed to be in order of the longest held prisoners. This is not right, and we won't go." The North Vietnamese refused to budge. This was the way it was going to be, they informed the POWs. But Jim and the rest of his group were adamant. They told the Vietnamese that they would have to carry them onto the plains. They would not go unless it was in the exact order of captivity. The discussions continued that way virtually all night. Occasionally, the North Vietnamese would get up and leave the room, returning later only to reiterate their orders. Finally, an American Air Force colonel in his dress blues entered the room. He had accompanied Henry Kissinger to Hanoi to sign the final agreements, and the V had apparently retrieved him to settle the dispute. He told the men that their out-of-order release had been worked out in a side deal.
That's Colonel Gaddis, right? So that's what role he played. He wasn't a senior POW. He was with Kissinger and was a senior Air Force officer on the ground when this stuff was going on.
There had been some last-minute problems with the negotiations, and Kissinger was in Hanoi trying to work them out. Releasing these 20 men out of order was a goodwill offering on the part of the Vietnamese. The U.S. could not dictate the terms. The prisoners still refused to go out of order. Exasperated, the colonel asked, "Well, do you still obey direct orders from your military?" The men replied, "Yes." The colonel snapped, "Then I am ordering you to get on that plane tomorrow." February 18th, 1973. Jim never knew why he'd been selected to leave in that special group of 20 men, later dubbed Kissinger's 20. The other prisoners were to be released in groups of 100. Exhausted by the all-night negotiations, Jim took off his prison pajamas for the last time and put on his new uniform. In his words, "It was hard to believe at first. We got on the bus and drove to Jhelum Airport. Of course, we were all just gawking around, because it was the first time we'd seen Hanoi, really, since we'd been there. And the destruction was really evident. Lots of people were watching. It was kind of a big deal for them, too, I guess. Arriving at Hanoi's Gia Lam Airport, they saw droves of North Vietnamese citizens who had come out to witness their departure. The Paris Peace Accord included detailed instructions on the procedure for turning the POWs back over to their country. The men formed two lines and were returned to their country one at a time. A Vietnamese official and an American would call off the same name, and the man being released would step forward to be met by an American officer who escorted him to the C-141 Starlifter. Naval POWs were met by a naval officer. Air Force was met by Air Force, and in this fashion, each POW received his own traveling companion. From February 12th through April 1st, 1973, a continual flow of flights out of Hanoi returned 591 POWs to American soil and to their anxiously awaiting families. According to the U.S. Department of Defense, 325 Air Force personnel, 77 Army, 138 Navy, 26 Marines, and 25 civilian employees of U.S. government agencies were returned. Tragically, many thousands never came home. According to the National Archives, 58,220 United States military personnel lost their lives in the Vietnam War. As of June 9, 2016, according to the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency, 1,618 Americans are still missing in action and unaccounted for in Southeast Asia and China. Jim waited his turn in line, still in disbelief, for them to call his name. Captain James Richard Shively. He stepped forward. It wasn't a dream. He was going home.
You know, it's a, I mean, you listen to it, and the story's amazing. I just want to play a little bit more, and what it is, it's you know, they fly from Hanoi to Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines and what that experience was like. And you know, so they have no clue, right? So, and you're going to hear him talk about, he had no clue that people all over the country were wearing POW bracelets with his name on. And, you know, he would go there and there were people there that showed up that had, you know, his name on their bracelet. And, I mean, if you can imagine, I was laying in bed, you know, like, wow, how, I must have been, talk about, you know, a lot. Holy shit, man. And, it's cool stuff.
Part 3. Home again. One more roll. We toast our hardy comrades who have fallen from the skies, and were gently caught by God's own hands to be with him on high. To dwell among the soaring clouds they've known so well before, from victory roll to tail chase at heaven's very door. As we fly among them there, we're sure to hear their plea. Take care, my friend. Watch your six, and do one more roll for me. Commander Jerry Coffey in Hanoi, 1968. Chapter 16. Return to Freedom. Clark Air Force Base, Philippines. Travis Air Force Base, Solano County, California. February to April 1973. It wasn't until the plane was actually airborne that Jim decided it was, in his words, for real. Celebration broke out as the Starlifter ascended and flew across the coast. In the words of Ed Meckenbeyer, a fellow POW and friend of Jim's for life, when we got airborne and the frailty of being a POW turned into the reality of freedom, We yelled, cried, and cheered. According to another POW, everything seemed like heaven. When the doors of that C-141 closed, there were tears in the eyes of every man aboard. Aero medical teams tended to them during the 2.5-hour flight, while the men smoked and laughed and got caught up on the topics of the day. They were pleasantly surprised but unprepared for the hero's welcome they received at Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines. After years of subhuman treatment, suddenly they found themselves received like royalty, with television cameras, flashing lights, cheering crowds, and requests for interview after interview. Initially, the repatriated POWs suffered apprehension about their return home. They had no idea what kind of welcome they would receive back in the United States. The officers accompanying them quickly set their minds at ease. The American people were glued to their TV sets, anxiously awaiting their homecoming. As the men deplaned one by one in the Philippines, they were asked to go straight to the TV cameras and say a few words to the excited Americans watching over the live broadcast. It started to sink in for Jim when his feet touched the ground on the red carpet that had been rolled out for their return. He was free. Smiling, he saluted the welcoming officers, waved at the crowds, and spoke a few words of appreciation into the microphone. It was all a whirl. Finally, after the speeches and interviews were over, they drove the POWs to the hospital for a brief physical to determine if they were healthy enough to travel home. Jim found himself deposited in a nice, clean room. He had a bed, with sheets, and took a long, hot shower. A tailor came in and measured him. He had to have a couple of fittings for a new uniform with ribbons, as the men were supposed to look nice when they got back to the States. The chefs on base had prepared a soft diet for the men, unsure of their physical condition. But most of them bypassed the soft food and headed straight for the steak.
That's awesome, right? Yeah, piss off with your applesauce and mashed potatoes, man. Where's the steak?
Jim ate his first real meal in years. Steak, eggs, and hash browns. Jim and several others took time to visit the schools on base. The students couldn't wait to welcome the returning patriots with handmade signs. "God bless America and you," read one poster. When the men arrived at the middle school, the 900 excited students waiting outside became so unmanageable the teachers had to move everyone indoors. Jim gave a short talk and thanked the kids for their hearty welcome. One young man had a very special gift for Jim. It was the bracelet he had worn while Jim was in prison, engraved with Jim's name and shoot-down date. It had been worn so much it broke in half, so the student had had another bracelet hastily made for Jim, etched with the date of his release, February 18th, 1973. For the rest of his life, Jim would make middle school kids a priority on his speaking schedule. Jim's nurse had flown in from Fairchild Air Force Base in Spokane.
How cool is that? Right? I mean, Expo 74. The apprehension you feel, and then you start asking about it. I mean, if you put yourself in their position, you know, you don't know, you know, what's going on in the country. You've heard, you know, the propaganda that Americans are against the war, you know, how will they be treated? And then you have the people that are there saying, no, the whole country is waiting for you. And if you could imagine how stunned, I mean, literally, how, like, what do you mean? Like, oh no, like, this is on national TV. And the whole country's watching. Like, what? And I remember being a kid, and I'll tell you what I remember. In 1973, I think I was a sophomore in high school. I remember them being released. I remember, though, there would be show after show as they, when they came home and landed,
and met their families. And, you know, there's the one picture that is, you know, that is so famous, and that is, you know, he's an Air Force officer, and he's on the tarmac, and you see, you know, it looks like a teenage daughter. And I don't know where they were supposed to be, but you see her, and she's running towards him, right? So when you hear that audio, I see that picture. And then you see, like, her brother, sister, mother, and another brother, you know, trailing behind her, right? And you see, you know, that raw emotion of, you know, all that uncertainty for so many years coming. So it's really, it's pretty cool. The book is called 6 Years in the Hanoi Hilton, An Extraordinary Story of Courage and Survival in Vietnam. It's written by Amy Shively Hawk, right? Jim Shively's daughter. John McCain writes the foreword, and it's really, the story's composed, she tells it at the beginning, that in his last years, he sat down and he told his story to a writer. So it wouldn't, you know, people would know about his story. And that's what she's turned into this, this book. So anyway, but it made me consider listening this morning, just that, you know, their protest, which is indicative of how solid they were as a group, right? And, you know, their whole thing, to return with honor. And the leadership of Admiral Stockdale, and how powerful that was for them. He tells a story in the book when they got all put together. And I can't remember, I think they had a religious service, and they took whoever was doing the readings, and they had a whole bunch of people do readings, right? So they would have to beat a whole bunch of people, not just one person. So they were taking people out to be beaten, and everybody else started singing the national anthem. And one of the guys in the book, one of the guys is quoted as saying, you know, as they drug me away, my heart, you know, I don't know what he said. He said something about the size of his heart or how inspiring that was. And he knew, you know, he's going to get the crap, you know, beat out of him. You know, he knew he's going to get tortured, but he said it was one of the most inspirational things that's ever happened to him in his life, to hear them singing that and, you know, what it meant in the desolation that they lived in. So it's a cool book. It's a cool book. So, with all of that said, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this version of the national anthem, which is certainly no better than the one that was sung in Vietnam Lo all those years ago. But they make the morning official. Good Thursday morning to you. Thank you. dedicated to Jim Shively of the United States Air Force, F-105 pilot, shot down and held in Vietnam, and to his daughter Amy, who published this book to honor her father. So this is dedicated to both of them.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get up. The only reason I stuck around that low paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda anytime you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, CFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
.37 here on a Thursday. Time for us to check the weather, take a break. We'll check news headlines, and then you're going to hear Lynch and Kenny. We're going to talk about training. The training that we did in Quantico at the infantry officer course, which is pretty realistic training. And we worked really hard. So we get into that. We recorded it last night, but we get into that by talking about the mishap between the F-18 and the KC-130J and the difference between hard training, right, and reckless training. And so we kind of, and then this other discussion gets kind of going impromptu. So anyway, you'll hear that after we talk about Iran. Not very much, though. I don't think if I could, you know, summarize. I think everybody believes that that attack on Saudi Arabia was done for internal consumption. And I'm really curious to hear what... we've got to come up with a name because she can't use a real name. So she's got to pick a name that I can call her. So let's just call her Betty for the sake of argument. So Betty, I'm curious to hear what she has to say, right? You know, if it was done for external consumption, whose consumption is it done for? So, I'm curious. Anyhow, the weather. Currently, partly cloudy and 77 in Quantico, partly cloudy and 85 at Camp Lejeune, clouds and 73 in 29 Palms, cloudy and 68 at Pendleton, Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy and 74. Okinawa, dark cloudy and warmed up a little bit, up into the 80s, 81. In Ramadi, in Iraq, it is evening, clear in 95. In Lashkar Gah, provincial capital, the Helmand province, it is dark, clear, and 86 degrees. The home of All Marine Radio, it is mostly cloudy and 70 degrees, looking for a high of 77 today, 74 tomorrow, and rain, what? And 72 on Saturday. I got no problem with that, right? Actually, you could feel the cool air kind of roll in last night. So yeah, that is a look at your weather. We'll come back. We'll check news headlines, email. Oh, hold on, man. I've been remiss, like shithole weather updates, all right? So here's the first one. Worcester, Massachusetts? Worcester? Is that how you say that? Worcester, Mass? Future home of the Red Sox AAA affiliate? 58 degrees, clear, winds are calm. Chris from Webster, out. All right, Chris. Thanks for the update. Worcester. It's spelled Worcester, but they don't speak English in Massachusetts, right? And you heard Kennedy, you heard Kelly speaking non-English from Massachusetts. Yeah, right? Cuber. It's Cuba. There's no ER on the end of that. This is Nancy sends in from Western Pennsylvania. She sends in her mud hole weather update. Right, Nancy, it's a shithole weather update, okay? Get it right. Cloudy scattered showers through the day, 63 degrees currently, winds out of the west-northwest in northwest Pennsylvania today, and I didn't think he'd get it in, but he did. Big Dave in Vacaville, right? He just gives me the forecast. He didn't even give me the current temp, right? Beautiful weather in Vacaville, 88 degrees, clear and breezy. Have a good day. Okay, here's what we need, sports fans. We need the currents, okay? Now, if you want to include the forecast, I got no issue with that. I'll be happy to give it. But we need current time, right? No, I don't even need a time. We need your current temperature, the winds conditions, and the skies. And if you want to include the high for the day, feel free. Okay? Now, I know this takes a little bit of training, and I'm patient with people, so that is what it is. So, another email. Matt, could you give me the title of that book that you played the audio from? Yeah, you know, again, and I've got interested in this and the whole, you know, how is this possible that, you know, these guys who went through so much came home with so little PTSD and returned to very, very high functioning lives? How did that happen? You know, what made that happen? What was the secret? What are the footnotes behind all of that? And so when you begin to read about them and you hear their stories, they're honestly, they're amazing stories. That book is entitled, 6 Years in the Hanoi Hilton. The other one I will tell you is Lessons from the Hanoi Hilton. That's good too. So yeah, those are the titles. Yeah, I can listen to an audiobook now in a day. Right? So right after I get off the air and I start doing all my internet stuff that I hate to do. Yeah, website. Hey, let's have a website. All right. Just punch that person in the face and tell them to go away. Who are you? Why do you hate me? Go away. Yeah, because, you know, if your website's going to be anything, guess what has to happen? Somebody has to maintain that every day, right? Content and all the rest of the crazy stuff that goes on there. So anyway, so I do that. So then what I'll do is I'll flip the book on, and then the last couple of days, because of my back, what I've done is I grab my cell phone and I lay down on the floor, and I have the audio book on, and I use my phone to return emails and set up interviews and things like that. Yeah, Jack Riley going to come on the program. I want to talk to Jack about the aftermath of Vietnam, and I want to get his thoughts on that. But Jack's having a little surgery this week, and so he said maybe late in a week. Oh yeah, Kent. Hey, can't start the show without the shitheads barking. There you go. You're going to hear from him. Hopefully the interview I did with General Zinni, I'll be done with that next week. So hoping that. I'm hoping that you're going to hear Betty. I have to think of a name. We have to think of a name for her. Irene on Iran? Does that make it? Is that good? So, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how we will conquer that. But I do believe it should be something that sings, right? If we're going to have a name like that, it's got to be something cool or something that sings. So Grant Newsham's going to come on next week. So you might hear both the Iranian expert and the Chinese expert on in the same week. Alex Holling's going to join us next week. Yeah, a whole bunch of good stuff. And I'm working on another battlefield study. But I'm having battlefield study cramps. So if you know somebody or you know a subject, I really want to do Kantian, but I can't get the people that I want. So, anyway. So, uh-oh. Oh, from Vacaville. Currently 71 degrees in Vacaville, headed for 88. Well, no shit, man. All right, let's get it together. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We will we'll check some headlines. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home. What the hell was that? Oh, I think I know what that was. No, I don't. Oh, I know what that is. All right. Hey, there's a lot of stuff going on here, man. Relax. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to my dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right.
Anything she needs, yeah. Me. Don't worry about it. That's my seed. Oh, that's all me. The snow. If you cross her, then you cross me. Cross me. Cross me. If you, if you, if you, if you. Anything she needs, you can call me. Don't worry about it. That's my seed.
It is a revenge song. Catherine just doesn't understand.
She ain't messing with no other man. Me and her are something different. I really need all you to understand. There's nobody coming close, and I don't ever want to run around. I spend my youth jumping in and out. You know I want to love it now.
Alright, headlines. NATO-Ukraine wrap-up. Trident. A rapid Trident exercise testing U.S.-backed modernization efforts. Ukraine, man. All over the news. U.S. lawmakers want to probe into the possible Pentagon role in delaying funding for the Ukraine. No, now we can't get them money fast enough, right?
That's my seed, oh, that's all me. The snow, if you cross her, then you cross me, cross me, cross me. If you, if you, if you, if you cross her.
Ohio man wire brushed me yesterday for not being interested in the in politics. I'm sick of I'm sick of it. It doesn't matter to me, right? I'm so sick of it. I don't want to see Nancy Pelosi. I don't want to see Donald Trump. Right? I want somebody to try to do the right thing. Right? Somebody try to do the right thing. And all I see is this game of charades we play. Right? I like this part of the song.
Keep a little blade up. Close to you. No one say hi to me.
That's one of my favorite parts.
Better pay your respect to the
queen.
Better do that without a third. Gotta respect the HBIC.
HBIC, man.
You need to know if you still want
that. You know what that stands for. Tell me that's not a song about revenge. Come on. Catherine living in Never Never Land. Yeah, hello.
It's not. It's a happy song about devotion.
No, it's not. It's a threat to somebody. All right, anyway, let me do this. Yeah, so all morning long, the House Intelligence Committee, led by Adam Schiff, oh my God, has been losing its mind over this whistleblower stuff, right? Now, is it any more than somebody who hates Trump in the intelligence world, right, filed a complaint? Is Sean Hannity going to be screaming, right, deep state, and we're going to roll our eyes only to find out again, right, that people acted unprofessionally because of their own politics? You know, is that what we're going to find out? It's just disgusting, you know? It's disgusting. And so, yeah, so Ohio man, he was wire brushing yesterday. You've got a Biden son and all that. I mean, hello. All right. So is there anything else the Stars and Stripes I would tell you about other than gossip? No. Nothing. USNI News, hard news. And my computer's being slow, I apologize. Navy surpasses 80% aircraft readiness goal, reaches a stretch goal of 341 up fighters. How about that? Congratulations, Navy, right? That needs some good news, for God's sake. Congratulations. The Navy has exceeded the Defense Department's requirement for having 80% of its operational Super Hornets and Growlers mission capable and has met the stretch goal it set for itself, the service announced on Wednesday. So congratulations to the Navy. All right, that's the only hard news stories I see there. There was a Marine Reserve unit that was going to have their birthday ball at Mar-a-Lago. Marines in the unit, the 4th Air Naval Gunfire Liaison Company, Anglico, based out of West Palm Beach, told the Palm Beach Post on Monday that due to a backlash, they had changed plans at the last minute and will now host their event on base. We went from dinner tables at Mar-a-Lago to picnic tables in the gymnasium. Senior Anglico officials and former members of the ball's planning committee told the Palm Beach Post on a condition of anonymity. It had been reported days earlier in the Miami Herald that the unit was planning to hold its 244th birthday ball at the property. Now, this comes on the heels of, right, the Air Force using his the president's property in Scotland to stay, right? And so not really sure what benefit this Marine unit reaps from going out there, but here's what they say. Quote, it's our prerogative where we want to hold the ball. We went to Mar-a-Lago. They didn't come to us. We did it by ourselves, the Marine said. But when asked to confirm the cancellation to the Marine Corps Times, Marine Reserve spokesman Major Robert Hollenbach released the same statement he did after the initial story. We are aware that Marines and 4th Air Naval Gunfire Liaison Company are considering celebrating their Marine Corps birthday ball at Mar-a-Lago, Hollenbach's statement says. As in the case every year. Birthday ball venues are explored by committees to determine the best available option. Fourth Anglico is considering many locations for this year's birthday ball, but is not yet committed to any specific venue. That might be a lie. Okay? Because the ball is funded by the Marines, no tax dollars went to Mar-a-Lago. The unit was expecting 700 guests. It had outgrown other local venues, which is why they eventually headed to Mar-a-Lago. So anyway, they're caught in the crossfires of national media firestorm. There you have it. That's what we're wasting our time talking about. Let's see. Top five stories in early bird now. Number one, Trump attacks globalism and urges pressure on Iran at the UN. You know, the president, he went around the world, right, and calling it like he sees it. And yesterday at the UN. So if you didn't see it, you might want to watch it. Number two, House begins Trump impeachment inquiry over a call to the Ukraine leader. Whatever. Number three, a year after Hurricane Florence, Camp Lejeune is still working on housing repairs. This is the story because the Secretary of Defense went down there to tour the base. So that's why that's in the news. That's been ongoing for last year, right? But because in the spotlight because of his visit. Number four, U.S. troops to Saudi Arabia stand by. No update to that plan, right? And in the story that we talked about yesterday, that I first saw on U.S. Naval Institute News, IG complaint pits Trump decorated operators against a rear admiral who fired a SEAL team triad. So, anyway. Yeah, if you haven't seen that one, check that out, right? They're going to do it in public. And what they're banking on is the president who came out, you know, publicly supported Chief Gallagher. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to yank the president into this one, too. Maybe they can get their careers back. Maybe he can rescue them. She wants to go by Smith. Miss Smith. Oh, my God. All right, so Mrs. Smith. So that's what we'll call her, Mrs. Smith. So Mrs. Smith will join us Monday. So, you know what, and I'll tell you what, I'm really excited about Mrs. Smith joining us. Because, you know, we're going to get the kind of insight into Iran that, you know, you get into China, which is going to be pretty cool. So I'm excited about that. All right, some operational notes from overseas. None that I would share with you. All right. So we'll take a break. When we come back, the Lynch Kenny event begins. So hold on to your hats. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it. The one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.